Jesse, you're gonna try to steal my shine this time?
Bingo.
You sure?
What are you talking about, bro? This is
all right. Ooh, welcome. I knew you were gonna do that. I knew you were gonna do that.
Here we go.
Welcome to another episode of the It's Just Jokes podcast. My name is Joshua Chavin, a.k.a. Slim Battle, a.k.a. Baby Giannis, a.k.a. Mr. Take Your Girl in Front Your Face. I'm here with my co-host. First, Jesse Pink.
Yo.
A.k.a. Dolomite P, a.k.a. Baby Samoa Joe, a.k.a. Groovy Grizzly. Why? Because he keeps it wrong, you hoes. Next is Derek Small.
What's the word?
A.k.a. D Smalls, a.k.a. Anthony Mackey Jr., a.k.a. Damn, Derek, where'd you find this pod? Shout out to Dre for everything behind the scenes and for the intro music. We appreciate you. You'll notice I didn't say Kobe. He had some work-related business to take care of, so we're going to be writing this episode without him. But joining us today is Jordan Williams, a.k.a. J. Will Made It, a.k.a. Jordan the Conqueror, a.k.a. Supreme Leader. What's going on, Jordan?
What's going on with y'all, man? Good to be here.
Thank you so much. And Jordan is from the Two Black Nerds podcast. So if you haven't already subscribed and listened to that and gave them 5 stars, go ahead and do that now. Y'all know the deal. But yeah, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, no, man, I appreciate y'all asking me to be here. Definitely always got to support and rep the podcast game for us Black creators out here trying to do it. So, you know, thank you for the invite. Always happy to help out in any way that I can. So I'm looking forward to it.
That was such a good answer. Like, you see how, like, he's grabbing the mic. He just grabbing the mic.
Y'all can't see it, but he in the throne room. He has the mic. He has the director chair, too. Like, yeah, you know.
There's some of my fanboys out here real quick.
Yeah, anything I do to help out the little bros, you know what I'm saying?
You know, got to get comfortable. Got to have a setup ready, you know. Just got to be on it.
No, like, literally since, like, for the audience that doesn't know, like, me and Josh know Jordan from college. He's always been, like, organized. Like, he'll come to something, like, fully prepared. Like, he ain't never just winging it. Like, bro always has it, like, fully prepared.
That's what I try to make people think, you know. But on the back end of it, I'm like, I don't know. But, yeah, you know, the best case scenario, it's good to be prepared and good to be punctual. But, you know, we all deal with all the – many factors that we can't control. So you do the best you can. You know what I'm saying? So you do the best you can and you just keep rolling with the punches and figure it out from there.
I don't even make excuses no more when I'm late or anything. I'm like, hey, I ain't gonna hold you, bro. I ain't wanna do it.
Why are you late? You already
that's valid,
one
though.
Thing to another, like, yeah, no time to lose. Like, we gotta, like,
and I still end up late, G.
He's acting different because we have guests on. Jesse's
right,
always
right,
the one.
Right. He had money in front of guests.
Jesse's always the one getting on us, if anything. So
man. It gotta be that one, though. It gotta be that one that's just like, yeah, no, I'm just not gonna be here right now. I'm gonna be there when I'm there, you know?
Yeah.
For sure.
But yeah, so like Jordan, or like, excuse me, like Derek said, we know Jordan from school. He was both of our mentors in a program called NBMI, Mizzou Black Men's Initiative. So even before we get into any of the movie stuff or anything like that, I just wanted to ask you first, like, you know, as someone that not only went through the program during undergrad and mentored and then came back to teach the program, what are some of your favorite memories of NBMI, as well as just, like, you know, why did you even want to go into mentoring and leading the program and all that kind of stuff? Because that is a big responsibility and task to do on top of a grad school schedule, on top of any creative projects that you wanted to do.
Yeah, man. So NBMI, that was something that I was a part of my first year at Mizzou. Those guys sort of found me as I was just, like, wandering around. I think it was like the Welcome Black barbecue that I was at. And so Mark Mays, who, you know, most people who come through that program, they know of, he just found me and talked to me about the program. And I just decided to show up to the meetings, you know, and be there. And so my freshman year experience was, it was really kind of shaped by being a part of that for that first year. And I met a lot of people that I probably wouldn't have had, you know, the chance to meet if I didn't do it. And there were a lot of great memories. We had a lot of fun. We did a lot of, you know, events and service, and we did the spring break trip, which I will tell y'all, y'all trips were way better than the one that we had. The one that we had, oh man, it was on a budget. I'll just say that. But you know, it was a great experience.
Jordan, do you not remember Charlotte and everything that happened getting there? And
oh, like, I remember.
That was a lot.
Oh, I remember, and I'm going to get into Charlotte, but I guarantee you I'll take that over what we dealt with on my spring break trip any day. I guarantee you. And when you hear the story, I guarantee you. But, you know, it was just a great experience, and I did it my sophomore year, too. I was, like, on the exec board that we had. And then after that, I just went and did other things with my time. Like, after that, I felt like those 2 years, like, I did what I could for the program, and that was it. But then when I was, like, working at the – Gaines Odom Black Culture Center, you know, working for Jonathan at that time, he was looking for an opportunity to restructure the program, because at that point it was just like a student organization, like a club almost. But he wanted to take it to the next level and do something a little bit different. And so he used a lot of the research that he was already doing as a part of grad school to shape what the new program was going to be. And, you know, there were focus groups that we did talking to like older members and stuff like that. But we were still kind of trying to figure out what the program was going to be. At this point, I didn't know what my role was going to be with NBMI. I was just like helping out because I was working at the BCC, and he was like, yeah, you were part of the program, so whatever knowledge you have, help me out. And it wasn't until like the summer before we started sort of this new phase of it where he asked me to be a teaching assistant. He asked, you know, myself and Curtis, and well, I was like, yeah, of course, like, why not? And you know, it was going to be like a really cool opportunity. I hadn't done anything like that before, but just to know where I was with the program and to like be able to give back in that way, I was really excited about. And, you know, to be honest with y'all, you know, we talked about wing and stuff, you know, at the beginning of this, but we were kind of figuring out stuff along the way that first year. Like it was, you know, just like figuring out what this program exactly, like what it was going to be. There was a lot of prep that we did, of course. Like there were things that we knew were going to happen, and we had a lot of support elsewhere from the university, but we had to figure out exactly what this was going to mean, you know, long term, because we didn't want it to just be like a one and done sort of thing. So a lot of thought for, you know, Black males and planning went into just like
how it was a great time, and I really enjoyed some of my favorite memories of the program.
You know, definitely were a part of like NBMI. Definitely those spring break trips, highlights for sure. My favorite trip, I gotta say, you know, was the Atlanta trip. So that was the second year we did Atlanta with that group. Great time. We had a lot of great fun down in Atlanta, and you know, definitely made a lot of memories there and got closer, you know, with everybody. It was a great time. And then Charlotte in particular was an interesting experience, right? Mainly because of that bus ride on the way back that took, it felt like a whole day. It felt like
it was on the way there. We broke down on the way to Charlotte.
We broke down on the way to Charlotte, but it also took forever to get back too, right? Like I thought it was like,
I think by that time people had like, some people had splintered off, or some people were getting off in St. Louis, some people were taking flights and stuff back.
You know what?
So I don't remember that as much, but I remember
we had
trouble. It was supposed to be a 12-hour drive, ended up being 20. Like I remember the first time we stopped, like there was some, I don't remember what was wrong, and I remember falling asleep. And then waking up and we're in the exact same spot. And I was like, oh, yep. No, this is bad. Like,
yeah, it was rough. We were in the same spot for like 3 or 4 hours, flat tire or something like that.
Yeah.
And that was the first year that we decided to get a bus. We wanted to be bougie. So we were like, yeah, we're not doing the whole driving car, because we drove to Atlanta. We drove to Dallas. And I mean, we were the only ones that could drive, like myself and Curtis and Jonathan, because we were, you know, employees for the university. We were the only ones that could, like, you know, maintain vehicles. But then by that third year, we were like, no, we're going to spend the money. Like, we're just going to get a bus. And turned out, bus breaks down, flat tire, 20-hour trip. It was terrible.
Terrible, bro.
When we got there, I really enjoyed Charlotte, too. I like Charlotte a lot. And it was a good time. But that bus ride was probably the worst I've ever had.
I mean, also part of it was that we had, like, 40 people. Too, so I think that would have made it a little bit harder to drive too, like, because there was our class was 30 plus the mentors plus you guys, like it was just way too many people.
It's a lot. Yeah, 40 college age men, musty. On one bus, musty, one bathroom, high, yeah, just everything, people just snoring. Some people talk too much and want to be loud. Like, this ain't the time, bro. Like, nah, we're not doing this right now. So it was an experience to say the least. And that was also, was that, we always did it at the beginning of spring break. So I think that was like kicking off spring break, but there mm-hmm. was still like yep. time after that.
Mm-hmm.
I had a whole trip to Dallas after that, that I did. I wasn't even in the mood for anymore. Cause I was like, this just took everything out of me dealing right. with 30 guys, you know, with this long ass bus ride and everything else we had to do. But, you know, nonetheless, like that's the stuff you remember at the end of the day. Like it was in the moment, it was terrible, but you look back on it, like I wouldn't have traded that. Like it was cool still. Like
it was definitely something that we like all were like, this sucks. And because we were all like, this sucks, it made us like, we bonded over that sort of thing. Sure. Also like, you know, as what happened in College Kids, when people started roasting and like in the group chats and you're on the same bus and you're just kind of like looking over to be like, did he see it yet? Did you, and we had
to do that too to kill time. It was like, well, we just gonna flame everybody like right now yeah. here in this moment in group me, because we were all in that same group me and people were just going in. I, you know, it was definitely some jokesters in that group, you know, had some stuff to say even about us older ones. I'm like, all right, well, we're gonna do this. Like, let's not forget like where I'm from now. So if we're gonna do this. So you know,
Jordan said he ain't the one. Look, Jordan,
I'm not the one. Like I'm from St. Louis, born and raised. Oh, like, man, we know
we
how
got
it
a, goes. We got a story about that. But let's actually, would this be a good time for music, Derek?
It's a perfect time for music.
We can have Dre break it right here. As
if you're going to ask for music, it's time.
Hey, Dre, play the music.
Get that music.
So.
Thank you for listening to the It's Just Jokes podcast. We appreciate your support. We will return in 10 seconds.
Right, that's that on that.
That's that on that.
And that's that on that.
So, you know, after, you know, being at Mizzou for so long, you know, you made your transition to New York. How did the idea for your podcast, you know, Two Black Nerds, exactly come to fruition?
It kind of just came out of nowhere, to be honest. So, my co-host Desmond, also an alpha, so we knew each other in undergrad. He was at K-State, I was at Mizzou, so we traveled there, he traveled to Mizzou, so I met him a couple of times in person in undergrad, didn't have any, like, substantial conversations, but we knew who each other were, and obviously social media was a thing, too, so
right.
It was, like, it was right around, like, when I was graduating undergrad, so 2014, 2015, that, you know, you just start talking about stuff on Twitter, and you see, like, people with similar interests, and, like, he would always comment on anything I would say about movies or comics or whatever it was. And, you know, come to find out, like, he's just as much of a fan of this stuff as I am. And so it wasn't until, like, a few years later, I think it was summer 2018, he was actually in New York doing an internship. And so he had hit me up, like, a few months before he got out here just asking some questions and stuff like that. And then he ended up staying with me for a few weeks. And so during that time, I mean, we would just be kicking it, playing video games, watching stuff, and we would just have these long conversations about movies and all that type of stuff, pop culture, entertainment, just long 3-4 hour conversations, right? Knowing I got to be up for work and I'm just up until 3-4 in the morning having conversations with this dude, you know, talking like you had knew each other, you know, for a long time. And so after so many of those, you're like, well, maybe we can do something here. Like, obviously we have a lot of thoughts, we have a lot we could say. And we started, you know, just having conversations with, like, maybe we could do something. And we also both had a similar interest with just, like, media as well. Like, he knows technology, you know, he does video and graphic design and editing. So similar interest there, because I had, you know, some exposure in that, you know, aspect. And so it was also a conversation of, like, well, if we were to do this, we can also do it ourselves. Like, we don't really need anybody. We can obviously put this together, we can edit it, we can chop it up however we need to, you know, to do so. And so it was just a conversation that started that way. But then, you know, he still was finishing school, and then he came back and moved out here permanently about a year and a half ago. And so that's when it was like, well, you're here now, so let's try to do something, you know. And so I gotta say that we just had, like, a few conversations going to the movies on what we thought it was gonna be, what it would look like. Just, you know, spent a few months just kind of thinking about it, because it was something that I didn't want to rush and just, like, put out, because I had been a part of, you know, several things like that where you just kind of hop on, it is what it is, and, you know, it doesn't really last too long. And my biggest thing was like, well, if we're going to do it, let's try to really see if we can, you know, make this go for a while. And so we spent some time just like thinking about what it was going to be. And so we finally have reached a place where we felt comfortable with it, and, you know, the right stuff started to come into fruition for us. And yeah, from that point, like once we made the decision to like really do it and go for it, about a month later, you know, we recorded our first episode. So we were ready to do it and be on it. And so that's how it all got started, man. Just two guys, similar interests, you know, into the same stuff, went and saw the same movies every week. So it was just easy. You know, it was like, why not do this? And so that's how it all came to be.
That's dope.
That's pretty dope. And I want to reference like one of your most recent episodes from there. I think I looked on, because, you know, we do our homework, you know. So I looked through season three, and the most recent one I saw from season three were when y'all were talking about the Blood Flies, you know, around the time of Juneteenth, Insecure. And you and Desmond were making a real good point about how the film started, the Blood Flies, like how it started with friendship, and then it essentially twisted to something, you know, particularly different. And like, I love how you all like tied in Juneteenth and like some of the African-American connotation or the societal pressures of which African-American men, particularly African-American veterans, face. I really did like that tie-in. The one thing I will say, like, y'all, is that you all don't, so, you know, in the past for me, like, if I wanted to know a movie review or anything like that, you look at Eper and Roper, right? Just some shit like that. But they're not fully going in depth with the movie, I think, the movies as much as you all did, in particular with the Blood Fives. So the way how you talk about movies, it kind of makes me wonder if you have any type of interest or admirations for movies that particularly inspired you to do something in filmmaking, or movie making. Like, has your interest in movies, in other words, and studying them and watching them and talking about them, like, ever make you want to pursue a career in movie making and filmmaking?
Yeah, man. I don't even know where to start, honestly. Well, I would say with, like, before I get into that, with, like, the conversation around movies and just, like, how we talk about them, that's kind of the beauty of podcasts, right? Like, you don't have to limit yourself with a word count with just like writing a review. And there was a time where I was doing a little bit of writing, but it was just like really arduous for me. I didn't really enjoy it. So I like just speaking about it more. So that's a beautiful thing that we can just like have an outlet and speak about it for as long as we want, you know? And so that's like a great benefit to it. And, you know, there's tons of podcasts out there. I've been influenced by, you know, YouTubers and other people who do podcasts and stuff like that I really admire, listening to their stuff and listen to how they talk about it. So I'm always inspired to like try to be better and to try to, you know as much as I can about whatever we're talking about. But in terms of just like a career, lots of people ask me this, so this is not like a new question. But the thing for me is like it's a fine line, and I want people to understand this, like whoever's listening, because I have to like tell people this. I don't, and I've never wanted to make a movie. Like, that's not something that I've ever been interested in. And that's because I've had experience doing things that are similar, and I don't like the process of it. There's just a lot, and I won't get into details about it, but there's a lot to it that I don't particularly enjoy, right? I much more appreciate and enjoy seeing a finished product and being able to dissect it, talk about it, analyze it, think about it, do all of those things, right? And so I've never had, you know, ambitions or aspirations to make a movie or to write a movie per se. So I wouldn't want to pursue that. The thing that I am interested in, though, is sort of, one, being a part of that world, of course. Like, I definitely want to be a part of that world in a sense. And so what would more so interest me is kind of the process to help promote a movie, help get the word out. Like, how do you get people to even want to be interested in this product that you're putting out? How do you get people interested in seeing this, right? Like, how do you help really create sort of that that word of mouth and that excitement around whatever it is that you've created? I would be more interested in doing something like that to really help shine and expose a light on whatever the creative, you know, piece is. And so something related to marketing, you know, and promotion, things of that nature would be ideal. But really the thing for me is, and I've been able to like see this early, you know, I'm really careful with it because I don't want something that I'm so passionate about that makes me happy genuinely. I don't ever want it to turn into it feeling like a chore and a job taking over my passion for that, because I've had that happen with several other things in my life. And I've been able to see it like, yeah, I really enjoy doing this, but then once it became a job, or it felt like it became a job, I don't like it anymore. And I don't want to do it anymore. That's just the type of person that I am. You know, other people can deal with that and it works for them. But for me personally, it doesn't. And so I wouldn't want to do something that would just turn me off, you know, to even being passionate about it. So, you know, I definitely think about that a lot, but I think with what I plan to do and where I plan to go, I think I'll still be able to maintain, you know, both that passion for it, but then still be able to pursue, you know, a deeper career into that stuff. And there's things that I do now, like I'm not in the film industry, I'm not a part of that, but there's things that I do now that tap into that, you know, with like current work that I do and stuff like that. There's things that I actually, you know, for my actual job that I can like sort of tap into that passion and see like, oh yeah, that still works here. That still makes sense. And so we'll see how that transitions, you know, in the future. And I'm looking forward to what that looks like. But yeah, I'm not trying to be on a movie set. I'm not trying to be out here like holding a camera or directing or in somebody's costume department or editing bay. Like I'm not really interested in that, you know? So it would definitely be a more behind the scenes type of deal.
I think that's kind of interesting that you said that specific answer, because I remember, you know, working at the Game Zone and Black Culture Center, how much you would always like consult when it came to like the different campaigns, like for Play the Part, for Model Pink, you know. Mm-hmm. I remember being on that committee and all that, and just seeing the way that you could shape something into like being like a central idea, but then like, you know, campus sees it like a month later, they're like, ooh, who came up with this? Or, you know, who influenced this flyer? I know you all always had like a say in those things, like you and Curtis, you know, when you all were working there. So it makes perfect sense that you would like want to help promoting, because, you know, whether it was you directly shooting something or you like talking about like, this is how the flyer should look, I remember you always having a hand in a lot of the promotion.
Yeah. And I appreciate you even like bringing that stuff up, because it was always those conversations around that stuff that got me excited. Like, how are we going to get to the end goal? You know, and what is the idea, and what can we do to get there? You know, and, you know, again, a lot of the work that I do now professionally is that type of work, you know, like, what's the idea and what can we do to achieve whatever the goal is? You know, I mean, that's what marketing is. You have to solve a problem, you know? So, it definitely, yeah, I think to your point, like it definitely came from having those experiences and knowing like, yeah, sort of, you know, thinking about this stuff and like trying to figure out what it's going to look like. That for me was a lot more fun ever than going out in cold weather at 7-8 in the morning, trying to film people who don't have a clue what they want to do. They just tell you like, yeah, we just want to shoot this. And it's just like, all right, well, you know, I need like an idea or a concept, because I can't really go off of that. Like stuff like that. Never really. I just don't, that's just not me. I don't like doing stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? So I, you know, I appreciate. Yeah, no, for sure. And I appreciate the people that can do that, you know, that can get out and do that nitty gritty, but that was never something like I was cool at it. I could pull it off if necessary, but I didn't want to make that like a long standing career for myself.
Yeah, that's very, like Derek said, that's very interesting that you say that. Because someone that actually does want to go into like screenwriting, directing and all that kind of stuff, like your eye for being able to not only spot things, but, you know how a story is being told. Like your opinion on movies is someone's that I very much respect. So that's very interesting that you say that. And so like, I guess my question is then, where does this love for movies, TV, animation, all that kind of stuff, like where does that originate from?
Oh man, well, it definitely comes from my childhood, like many things, right? Like I think for most people, like that was something that at a very young age, so I was raised as an only child. And so I had a lot of time to myself to just kind of do whatever. And my mom, she sort of let me learn independence at a pretty young age, you know? So it was not unusual. And I don't want people to get alarmed when they hear this, but at a young age, like 3 or 4, it wasn't unusual for me to just be at the crib by myself and be fine. You know what I'm saying? Like no parent around. And eventually like my grandma or my uncle or somebody would come check on me. Like I wouldn't be there for like 10 hours alone, but it wasn't unusual. If she had to go work and dip out at, you know, 7 in the morning, I'd probably just be there chilling until maybe 10. And, you know, then my grandma come, you know, and, you know, take care of me for the rest of the day or whatever. That just wasn't unusual. So I was able to learn independence at a young age. And of course, like just being at the, you know, the house and you could barely walk, like I'm just going to watch TV and watch cartoons and do all of this, you know, for the whole day. And so at a young age, just being able to like do that stuff. And then like you get a little bit older and you start to just like notice things. Like I would notice like, yeah, my mom has like hella VHS tapes, like hella videotapes. And I would just like pick out something and watch, you know, whenever, especially if I hadn't seen it before. And there were only like 2 things she didn't let me watch. She kind of let me watch whatever I want to, which I'm happy for. I don't regret that. I don't know if I'll necessarily have the same process right. for my children if I ever have, you know, have them one day, but I was just able to kind of dig into whatever I was interested in. And so she had a lot of stuff. She had a lot of, you know, movies that I could just pick from, old stuff, new stuff, like whatever. I would just try it out. And those trips to like Blockbuster, you know, or, you know, I don't know how many people even know of like Hollywood Video. That was a thing. For real. Like I missed that place. Those were just places like I would get super excited to just go to. And again, I would spend a lot of time in there. She would just like drive me to like Blockbuster, drop me off. I would be in there for like 30, 45 minutes. She would go like do some other errands. And I would just be in there wandering around, just like fascinated, looking at movies. Like I wouldn't even pick up anything. I would just like go to movies, look at the cover, read the back, you know, stuff like that, just to see what it was about. And then probably walk out with maybe 2 things, you know. And there were probably, there's probably shit I had already seen before. Like I would just pick up the same stuff over and over. But I was always interested in just like learning about that. And just like spending a lot of time doing that type of stuff, man. It was just kind of a part of my upbringing because like my mom, she just like always watch stuff, and she always put me on to like all the old stuff, you know, all the old TV channels and old shows from the 50s and 60s, like TV Land, Nick and Knight was on all the time, watching stuff like that, reruns of old shows, finding new movies that just were on cable, you know. That's how it was, man. I spent a lot of time, I'm a homebody. I spent a lot of time inside the house, and I would go outside and play for sure. Like there was a stretch where that was like definitely a thing and like be active, but it was never a problem for me to just like entertain myself and to find something to do with my time. You know what I'm saying? So I was exposed to it at an early age. Definitely blame my mom for it. I'm happy how it turned out. It was a great thing. And it just, you know, it just developed and, you know, evolved over time. We her and I would go see a lot of stuff together. She would take me to the movies all the time to see stuff like that I wanted to see. And that's just really how it started, man. So definitely a young thing for me that started from a very early age, and it's just like grown and transformed into whatever it is now. I don't even know what it is now, but it is what it is now. So that's where it all began.
Man, you brought up Blockbuster.
Man. One left in the world.
It's still one.
It's in like Oregon or something.
Yeah, right? It's one left in Oregon. The only Blockbuster that's still in existence. And for a time, like when this pandemic first started, they were, you know, renting out as an Airbnb. It was like $4 a night, like something ridiculous. So, you know, people took advantage of that because they put it together real, real nice. Like they had the beds. Exactly. So it was just like a really cool thing to see. But yeah, it's one left in the world. Shout out to them. Hopefully they can, you know, keep.
That's so crazy that like we're at the age where stuff that was not even a child, like, I don't want to say that Blockbuster was a childhood staple for me. I know it was for you, but it's even stuff that was just like so normal. Like you see a Blockbuster every couple blocks or whatever is like going to be obsolete by the time that I bring kids into the world, or, you know, if I bring kids into the world, like that sort of thing. Like that's just so crazy to me. Like
Blockbuster, yeah. Radio Shack, Circuit City. I'm just naming like stuff.
Even stuff like CDs, bro. Like our kids are not gonna have no idea what a CD is.
CDs,
like
DVDs, cassette tape. You barely know folks who know A&R tracks, AR tracks. Right. So.
Exactly. Yeah, that's just the, you know, that's the world changing. It's a digital world.
Fuck, we all, you know? Jordan.
It's that's the evolution of things. It's a digital world now. Everything is in the cloud, on your phone, on a streaming service. Like, there's no need to go to a physical location when you got Amazon. They can get you anything you need. And but I mean, that's a part of the reason why I still collect stuff, because it's a nostalgia thing, like you mentioned earlier, man. Like, it's just one of those things, like, I had always done it, you know, so to just like stop doing it didn't really make sense to me. And of course, like, I buy movies like digitally, or I rent stuff and I use streaming services. Like, come on now, like, let's be real. Right. Like, it is 2020, but there's obviously still that side of me that appreciates that vintage nature of it. So anytime I get a chance, like if I'm traveling somewhere, this is kind of a nerdy thing, but I always look to see if they have like a local video store that still exists. And usually every town has like one video store. Like, it's just that one that still sells stuff like that. They still sell cassette tapes and CDs and DVDs and stuff like that. And I always try to go to just to see what it looks like. And they're usually like family owned businesses, but even now with a pandemic, it's really hard. Like, people already weren't buying that stuff. So now, like, people are like trying to save money and they're not going out. It's even worse now, of course. But yeah, man, like you say, getting old. Ain't getting no younger. Right. It's just happening. So
we're not getting any younger, but you know, with age comes, you know, experience, and yeah, it comes with experience. And we definitely see, like, with your upbringing, you had a quick affinity for movies, and films. And so with that being said, I need to ask you two questions and one question. What is your all-time favorite movie? And what is your all-time trash movie?
Listen, man. It is impossible for me to answer all time. Like, Jordan, for somebody, for somebody that is into it as I am, to say, like, yeah, pick one out of like the thousands you've seen. Like, there's just no way. Like, I can't do that. But what I can't, because it doesn't work for me. It, like, when I'm thinking of like favorites, it doesn't work for me that way. But I will tell you that a way that it works for me is, think about it by like genre. You like, what type of movie is this, right? I can think of favorites for that. So like, if you're talking about like horror movies, Scream, like, that's up there. If you're talking about like science fiction, action, The Matrix. If you're talking about a comedy, Coming to America, that was Eddie Murphy at his peak, amazing movie. If you're talking about like a crime movie, or a gangster movie, Goodfellas or No Country for Old Men. Like, those are incredible movies about, you know, crime and thrillers. War movies like Apocalypse Now, Thriller, Seven. So I can go down a list like that. Okay. Like, Back to the Future is in there.
You got Goodfellas over the Godfather?
Yeah.
Oh, no. No.
Okay.
Never. No, the Godfather, I mean.
Which Godfather? One, two, three.
Two.
See, here's the thing about, so one and two are, I mean, they're literally two of the greatest movies ever made, like, hands down. And there's fans on both sides that think, which the way that I think, like, the first one, like, I'm going to watch the first one before I watch the second one. All, like, if I just want to pop in one of them, it's going to be the first one that I choose. But the second one, on a technical level, in terms of like the story and like how it fleshes out, it's a better movie. Like, it's definitely a better movie than one. But one has more iconic moments and more memorable moments.
Okay.
So they kind of work that way for me. Three, we don't talk about.
Three
we don't talk about.
We don't talk about three.
Three is like season 8 of Game of Thrones. Like, it just doesn't exist. We don't talk about it.
This is one last hoorah. You might have perfectly summarized the debate, or you perfectly found a good way to differentiate the two Godfathers. Because in my household, that is a debate.
No, it definitely is. People debated. I mean, those movies came out like 40 years ago, 45 years ago. So like, it's been going on forever. But that's the way I think about it. Like, you know, you can pick which one you think is better, but one has the more iconic moments for sure. Like, when you think about The Godfather, you think about the opening shot, you know, with Michael Corleone. You know, you think about you know, sort of him getting shot down in the street. You think about that turn that Michael makes in the cafe when he has to go in that bathroom and get that gun. Those are the moments you think about. But two, you see some real menacing shit take place. Like, you see the true, like, evolution of the character. you know. And so I think
I also like his dad, his the backstory with his pops too. Like that to me was like, oh, so this is how they built this, like brick by brick, somewhat to speak.
You know, I gotta say, I get why a lot of people appreciate and like that. And I think Robert De Niro did an incredible job, like playing, you know, the younger version of like Michael Corleone. But I gotta say, when I do watch two, and this is why I, you know, made that distinction, when I do watch two, anytime they go back in time and we're looking at young Vito Corleone, it takes me out of the movie just a little bit. Like, it takes a little time to like readjust and remember, like, oh yeah, we are following like young Vito. And then you're into it. But it kind of takes me out of the movie a little bit, because I'm more fascinated with present day in the movie. I'm more fascinated with Michael's story and how he's like really assuming, you know, the position of being the Don, and you're seeing how that works out for him. But nonetheless, I mean, still like one of the greatest and most influential, movies, hands down. But yeah, man, like a favorite.
Now your worst, your least favorite.
What's the trash?
I mean, this could be a long ass list too, but I do want to try to pinpoint this. I don't think I've ever had less fun in a movie and a more frustrating time at a movie than when I went to go see Transformers Age of Extinction.
Oof.
Which came out in 2014. It's the one with Mark Wahlberg. So Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah, it's the first one with Wahlberg, right?
First one with Wahlberg. So yeah. Michael Bay was still trying to make them, because they were making money, of course. And
trash.
The franchise already, it's not a good franchise. Like there's moments that are okay, but it's not a good franchise. But when I went to go see that, it fucking sucked. It was terrible. And I grew up a Transformers fan. Like, I was really into these movies. You know, I grew up watching the animated show. I grew up watching Beast Wars and Cybertron and all of that stuff. Like, that was stuff I was really into. So when the first one came out, I was still young. So I was more fascinated by, you know, just seeing this on the big screen. Then you get older and you go back and watch, and you're like, this isn't good. And then the second one was ass. The third one was like, okay, this is actually kind of decent. There's like some good stuff here. And then the fourth one comes out, and it's just a shit show from beginning to end. And it's long. It's like almost 3 hours. And most of it is in like China, and it's hella stereotypical, and the characters suck, and Stanley Tucci's in it doing just weird shit. And it's just a weird movie. It's terrible. It's too long. The whole franchise, until they did this like most recent Bumblebee movie, was pretty mediocre. The Bumblebee movie I would recommend, though. It's actually really good. But it's mediocre as hell. I would kind of lump the whole thing together. It's just like a big piece of shit. But for Age of Extinction, like in particular, was terrible. And I really hated the fact that I had to like go and sit through that for almost 3 hours. So
Optimus Prime could give a hell of a speech, though.
Oh, listen, we'll never take that away from Optimus, especially because, you know, I think Peter Cullen is his name. I think he's the one that he's been voicing Optimus Prime for like decades. He's always going to come through. He's always going to deliver. But the rest of that, everything else around him, terrible. Nah. Terrible movie.
I was really, like, I had my fingers crossed. I was really hoping you would say Queen and Slim so I can get on here and trash Queen and Slim. Like, I did not like that movie whatsoever. It was so bad to me.
I mean, I'm not a fan either, but it's definitely not, I wouldn't say it's trash. I wouldn't put it in the trash category.
I liked everything about that movie except the actual movie, plot of the movie.
No, from not even, we can't even talk about the plot. We can talk about that weird, awkward love scene where they
awful.
We're not even gonna talk about that. We can talk about the leaked character backgrounds.
Yeah,
we can just go there.
That was awful.
Let's go there. We can just start there. That I have my issues with Green Book, but Josh gave me a good point. Green Book is funny. At least, how many say it's Green Book? Queen of Slim is just no.
See, the thing about Green Book was that, like, I don't like the premise that they built Green Book around. They told it from the wrong point of view. However, from a story-making standpoint, like, it hits the right notes when it needs to be. Like, when it needs to be funny, it's funny. When it needs to be serious, it can get there. So I can see how someone without even, like, context about the actual situation would actually really enjoy this movie. It's just that they completely told it from the wrong point of view. They made it about the driver and not about the pianist.
I'm sure Green Book is a fine movie. I'm just still hurt over the fact that it won all those Oscars. I don't appreciate that. So I still haven't seen it. But Queen of Slim has a lot of problems. For sure, like, it has a lot of problems for sure.
Somehow
that scene
they
is
got from
trash.
Ohio. Somehow they got from Ohio. No map, no GPS, no phones, nothing. Neither of them drive for a living. Somehow they got from not only Ohio to New Orleans, but a specific spot in New Orleans. And New Orleans is not already an easy city to navigate. Like, this makes no sense to
me. It's geographically a fucking bowl. I'm just going to throw that out.
That's true. No, yeah, you're right. I mean,
it's geographically a bowl. Shorty's law degrees just went out the window. Like, no logic was used at all.
Oh, yeah. That didn't matter anymore. Like, the movie is very convenient. Like, things conveniently happen to move the plot along for sure. And that's not that, you know, that's not a good sign when you're in that process. For me, I mean, I also had a big problem with the writing too. I think Lena Waithe, I haven't, you know, seen much of her work. I've only seen a couple things, but from what I've seen, I think she has great skill now, but definitely lots of areas to still improve on for sure. So I'm excited to hopefully see what that looks like. But yeah, man, I walked into the movie super excited about it. For the first half of it, I was kind of with it. I'm like, okay, this is cool. But then it takes a turn for sure. Like, I think once they get going and it becomes like this road trip thing, there's just a sequence of events that happen literally back to back to back where you're just like, well, that doesn't make sense. Why did they do that? How do we get here? A lot of things, just the dominoes fell and it all just kind of collapsed on itself. By the end of it, you're just like, what just happened in the past like 45 minutes to an hour that just kind of brought this whole movie down for me? Because by the time I walked out of the theater, I was like, I don't know if I like that. And I didn't like it, you know, so. Yeah,
and before, and we're gonna move on. I'm not gonna spend the entire time bashing Queen of Slim, although I could. I very much could. But for
that's
me,
the next show, right? Like, you're gonna do
that. Exactly. But for me, I think my biggest problem is they don't nail down the little things, like the very small details that you can easily nail down. Like, for example, they cut their hair in the movie, and then people are still easily able to recognize it. So when then, like, as a storyteller, then what was the point of even going through all of that? If people are still be like, oh yeah, those are those two motherfuckers right there. Yeah, that's Queen right there and that's Slim right there. You know what I'm saying? Like, those sort of things.
It doesn't even have no type of symbolical representation. That's not even clear enough. It's just these niggas decided to cut their hair. That's it.
Well, so they can get away from the authorities, and like, I understand the premise of that. And so then there has to be some sort of scene in there where this actually helps them, right? Like, this actually helps them get away from authority. Like, someone's like, I think I know you. I think I've seen y'all. It's like, nah, you haven't. It's like, huh? All right. Like, they look sort of familiar. You know, that little stuff like that. That's what I'm saying. Like,
I'm gonna say one small counterpoint, and then we can really move on. The only thing that I would counter to that is the fact that they don't know what they're doing. So theoretically, in their mind, they're thinking like, yeah, let's do this. This should help, you know, take away who we are. Like, this should help or make it difficult for people to identify us, but they don't know what they're doing. Neither one of them are criminals, right? So it was an amateur move. Everything they did along the course of the way was an amateur move because they don't know what they're doing. They're not criminals. They've never done this before. So that would be my only thing, that they intentionally did that to reinforce the fact that these are just two regular people who decided to evade the law, you know, and obviously that caught up with them because they made a lot of mistakes along the way. And they made the ultimate mistake at the end, which, you know, we know how that turned out. That would be my only counterpoint. But I see what you're saying. So
yeah. We can move on. I'm not gonna give that movie any more of my energy.
I'm not even gonna drop in Knives Out, but yeah, we can move on.
We're gonna have to talk about that another day.
No, it's a juxtaposition. It's a juxtaposition. A movie that works versus a movie that
movie
doesn't.
Was mwah, but now okay. We gotta move on.
Okay. Got you. Mm-hmm.
So we've seen a lot of different things, you know, go on with like the state of the world, you know, that it's in right now, from things, you know, being closed to opening back up, you know, and then even with it opening back up, you know, having adjustments, you know, to it. So kind of sticking in like the movie realm, what's your most anticipated theatrical release and why?
Oh, the Batman. Hands down, it's the Batman. It's no secret that's my favorite comic book character, always has been. He was the first one I saw, Batman in the Animated Series, Batman 89. That's what I grew up with. So as soon as I saw the trailer that they released a couple months ago, I was like, yeah, man, that's all I needed to see. That's going to be dope. Yep. Yep. Cool. Robert Pattinson. Yep. All of that. Yeah. It checked every box I needed it to check with like a very first look, and it's not coming out for like another year and a half. So it's going to be a while, but yeah, man, that's what I'm looking forward to the most. Anytime we can get a new iteration of that character on screen, which is something that I've, you know, identified with and have endeared for so pretty much all my life, almost 30 years, is like, yeah, I'm gonna be excited for that. So I can't wait for it. I think it's gonna be a great film. And, you know, to explain it a little bit more though, like what mostly got me excited about it was to just hear the director speak about it, Matt Reeves, who's done great stuff before this, so I have faith in him. But the influences that he has for this movie, I mean, these are movies that I love. Like, he talked about Chinatown and the French Connection being like big influences on this movie, and I'm just like, shit, like a Batman movie that's like taken from Chinatown, like that sign me up. Like, yeah, take my money now, like that's what I want to see. Mm-hmm. You know, like a real detective story that's like unraveling a crime and unraveling a story in that way, and seeing Batman sort of utilize those skills of his. So yeah, man, it has to be that one. There's other ones for sure. Like, I'm really excited to also see The Matrix 4, because, you know, again, I mentioned that's one of my favorite movies. So just the fact that they're bringing this back, I'm really excited for that. But yeah, most anticipated is definitely the Batman.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. Like you said, that they're showing off a lot of Batman's detective skills, because that's definitely something that hasn't been as prominent in the last couple of iterations of Batman, especially Bale. Like, I think that's my biggest issue with Bale's character, or his iteration of the character, is that he basically has everybody else do everything for him, and mm-hmm. he's just a guy in a suit with the money, and he's, you know, and he's putting it where it needs to be. I definitely think Pattinson is going to do he'll at least do an interesting job at it, whether that's good or bad. Like, I think it was going to lean more towards good, but it'll be very interesting to watch him, and especially see Batman interact with a lot of his rogues gallery too. You have the Riddler, you know, there's maybe a Court of the Owls like Easter egg in there, you know, like that sort of thing. Penguin, like all these different characters that he gets to interact with.
Yeah, man, you know, there's so much there for sure. Like you mentioned, that they can pull from, you know, from his rogues galleries, then, you know, things that we haven't seen before that have become like really big in the comics over the past like 10 or 15 years. But all the pieces show me like this is going to be something that's worthwhile. You know, I really think Robert Pattinson is a great, great actor. I've seen a lot of his work post Twilight, which everybody should, because he's done really good stuff. Matt Reeves,
he had a really weird accent in The Devil All the Time, though. It kind of distracted me, I'm not gonna lie.
Still haven't seen that one, so I'm gonna have to see. But he takes on weird accents occasionally. But I mentioned Matt Reeves, and you know, and then the rest of the cast too, like Colin Farrell, yeah. I really enjoy, and Zoe Kravitz. Like, there's a lot of good stuff to like about it already. So
we got a Black Jim Gordon, don't we?
Yeah, Jeffrey Wright, who's also, you know, one of the best like utility actors working. Like, you can put Jeffrey Wright in anything and he's gonna do really well. You can put him in James Bond, you can put him in Westworld, you can put him in kind of whatever you need him to be, and he's gonna deliver. Always a great performance. One thing I watched of him this year, I just watched like Boardwalk Empire for the first time this year, the HBO show, and he shows up in like the fourth season, he's a villain, and I've never seen him like play like a villainous role, and then he nailed it. He did it. Like, I was like, okay, like he can literally do anything you tell him to do. So once they were like, he has Jim Gordon, it's like, oh, that's actually that might be the perfect role. That might actually make the most sense, considering like what he's done. Physical appearance is there, of course. So yeah, there's a lot to look forward to with that.
Yeah, for sure.
Have you gotten the chance to even like visit the movie theater, you know, since they've changed the rules? Like, I think it was AMC, right, that kind of said that they were opening back up a little bit and all that. Like, have you got a chance to visit, or?
Yeah, the only trip I've made to a movie theater since the pandemic started was to see Tenet. It was not here in New York. It was in Chicago, because theaters are still not open here in the New York City metropolitan area. So I went and saw Tenet in Chicago and felt completely safe. Personally, I felt that they did everything they needed to do to make a visitor feel safe. Everything was clean, not that many people there. sanitizer obviously everywhere, masks, you know, were enforced. Like, I never felt uncomfortable or not safe when I went, you know, to the theater. But other than that, no, like, you know, like I mentioned, they're not even open here. And I mean, I'm sure we've seen the news, like they're in trouble. They're not doing well. Like, if people aren't going to the movies, there's no way that they can sustain this business. And they've already, you know, had massive setbacks and had to cut people, and they're in the hole. So it's a scary predicament, because it's the thing that I enjoy the most, going to the movies, like taking that physical trip to go. And I would go 2-3 times a week for most of the year. So it was something I was accustomed to doing, and not being able to do it, it sucked, you know, but obviously safety is key, and it's, you know, it should become the priority, of course, especially where we are now. We're in a worse position now with the pandemic than we were when it started.
So. Man, talk about it. But wait, before he says anything, wear your damn masks.
Listen.
Over the nose. Sanitize. Wash your hands.
Or best stay your ass home, bro.
Stay in the house.
Stay your ass home. No, just to comment on what you were saying, Jordan, I often contemplate whether this pandemic has the potential of, I guess I'm being dystopic here, pessimistic, wiping out the movie industry as it is, just wiping out all movie industries, and now we just make everything go digital, everything to go online. I want to circle back though and go back to your Batman reference. It makes sense for you to be in to be like Batman. Like, you literally just got on this phone, this Zoom meeting, like you was damn Bruce Wayne. Like, he's literally, I know nobody can see us. He's literally centered behind what looked like a lot of books. I thought this guy's really knowledgeable with books too. I'm like, damn, he reads or watch movies? This is really fucked up. I'm sure he does that too. But yeah, like, he has a lot of movies in the background too.
I do feel like if you move one of those movies, it's going to take you down to like your own personal bat cave or whatever.
Again, like, you never know, right? He pulls out Gone with the Wind, and boom, he's gone. And then on top of that, you're living in New York. So, like, come on.
Yeah, a little bit of Gotham there. Yeah. Well, you know, I won't deny that something won't happen if I pull, like, one movie out, like, something. You never know, but I couldn't tell you
keep talking, Jesse. It's not gonna be a bad cave, it's gonna be a shoddy. Like, all right, make another joke.
Yeah, but no, I mean, no, I could see that. Like, you know, he Batman's definitely my favorite, you know, so there's things. I mean, but, you know, even with that, he's kind of the least identifiable, you know, for me. Like, there's not a lot that I can identify with in terms of just his story and kind of who he is. Like, I appreciate how much of a loner he is and how much distrust he has for everything. I can relate to that because I don't trust a lot, you know. But obviously he's had some traumatic shit happen to him, of course, like parents are dead and raised by a butler, hella money, but still empty on the inside, spends his evenings wearing, you know, weird outfits and taking down criminals, even though he knows in his mind, like, I can never end crime, but he's going to keep trying every day. But I guess that's the point, right? Like, to always fight the fight. But
it's just to feel something, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, he's still human, right? But, you know, and that's the thing, though. Like, his humanity is one of those things that you latch on to, even though you can't relate to the wealth and the upbringing and all of that type of stuff. The humanity and the fact that he doesn't have powers, and the fact that every antagonist that exists in his world is purely a reflection of his own character, just a darker side of it. Every villain, Riddler, Joker, Catwoman, they all just represent a different aspect of his own character. And basically, these are all people, if he were to turn into a villain, they're the products of that. Like, if Batman were to be a villain, he would be a Joker or a Bane or, you know, a Penguin. Like, just looking at it from the different aspects, like, you know, the Penguin is like the political side, the Joker is the anarchist chaotic side, Catwoman is the institutionalized, like, I'm just gonna take what I can get, you know, and live my life. Like, I'm not gonna hurt people, but I'm trying to get what I can while I live, taking from the rich, you know, type of stuff. So they all just represent facets of his personality, and we all have those facets. We're all multidimensional people. We all have, like, you know, a lot of layers to us, and we could all end up as any one of those characters, but it's about, you know, it's about the path that you decide to walk and the choices that you make that sort of determine where you're going to go and whether or not you're going to, you know, veer off to the dark side or the light side. I'm going to go to Star Wars there a little bit, the light and the dark. So it all works, right? It's all stuff that resonates that people can relate to.
Man, yeah. I never really heard of that type of in-depth understanding of Batman. Like, in a lot of ways, you can argue that he needs them more than, you know, if anything. So I really do appreciate that analysis. I'm glad that you have that analysis now that you're going to assume the role of Batman. I'm assuming that, you know, now that you're in New York and everything. So, you know, thanks for letting us know this is what you're going to be doing. So when I see on the news on Twitter you beating up Riddler's ass in Tim's, I now know this is what you've been doing.
Not in Tim's, man. I swear. Well, listen,
that ass, bro.
I can't do any of that on a New York budget, on a regular New York budget. I can tell you that. So he has a lot more resources than me. But I mean, imagine that though, Batman like in real New York, and I mean, That'd be crazy. Was just like a local common guy, what would he wear? He would wear Tim's probably. I mean, even though that kind of be hard to get around, but got to account for the cold. Got to keep the feet warm. He definitely have a Yankee fitted. That would be a thing. You gotta have a bubble coat too. Bubble coat, gotta rock that. Shit, what type of jeans? I don't even know what jeans we're gonna go with, but something.
I have no idea.
Listen, either way, it'd be a hell of a sight to see. But I, you know, Batman has a lot of responsibility that I don't really care to have. You know, I'm good on that. I'm good on all of that. I appreciate that he exists in this fantastical world, but I mean, think about this though. Imagine if you really saw some shit like that in real life. You'd be fucking terrified. Like a man dressed as like a bat, and it's not like a bad looking bat. Like he put money into this. So you know whoever it is has money. I'd be fucking terrified if I saw that. Like,
and then also like he could just disappears whenever he feels, you know what I'm saying? Like you go to, even as a cop going to talk to him, he's like, yeah, Batman. Oh, no.
Right. Like it's okay. Like, who is this creep doing this? And has this much time to be out here, like.
And that's why Batman can never be black. That's why Batman can never be black. Because if he snuck up on somebody like that, they shoot him dead and be like, oh, well, vigilante.
I mean, black man ain't gonna be working with the cops either. Like, come on, let's get real.
Well, no. There's some of us. There's some of all skin folk ain't kin folk. You know that.
Yeah, some of us shut their asses out this past election. So, yeah.
Or, you know, in Kentucky. But, you know,
it's cool. Go off. Look, I y'all saying all book. This about Batman, but like y'all say all this about Batman is hard to find. I can find a nigga like this on the West Side. That's all I'm saying. Yo, there will be West Side standing on this podcast.
Come on.
You wild, bro. You
I did not see that coming.
I didn't know where he was going with that. I did not know where he was going.
Oh, took it there. He took it to a whole nother level.
Oh my God.
Before Derek gets to his question, I was going to say that, like, I do think that Batman is the most interesting, when he's done right, he's the most interesting DC character. Because, like you said, he has all those layers and he has a fantastic rogues gallery and all that. I think my only problem with Batman is becomes like when he's too, I don't even say overpowered, but they write him up to the same level as someone like a Superman or anything like that. Like, where he's like this. Like, he has all the answers to everything. I think there's more humanity in him when he's like, I'm figuring stuff out, but I don't know, but I'm going to work a way around this. Rather than, oh, yeah, I have an answer. Like, yeah, clearly I just carry, you know, this, that, or the third on me. All the, you know what I mean? Does that make any sense?
Yeah, no, it definitely does. And they do that. But it I think it's more of a – I think that's more of a business decision than anything. He's our number one guy. You know, he's kind of in charge of – really bringing in the cash for them as a company, you know, so they're gonna push them to the moon, as you know, to use like a wrestling term. And you know, we see how that happens in that world. Like, they find their guy, they identify
we can have a whole conversation about that too.
Yeah, but they know he's the most popular character that they have, you know, by far. So for little kids that are reading this, he has to win. You know, he has to win every single time. He has to outsmart everybody all the time. You know what I'm saying? That's kind of what it, you know, results back to a lot of the times. But you know, I think there's still interesting aspects of him that people take interesting angles and in different comic series and stuff like that. Like, there's still you know, the good thing about any of these characters is they're, you know, most of the time there's multiple takes on them. There's like 3-4 maybe even 5 different simultaneous interpretations of one character at the same time. So if you're not getting something in one area, you could probably just go to another story or another run and see something completely different and, you know, maybe be satisfied by it. But yeah, you know, definitely when he's not, you know, OP and, you know, you can kind of see him a little bit lower, you know, kind of fighting his way up, he's definitely more interested in that respect than, you know, just sort of winning every single time.
For sure, for sure.
So you've been in New York for a minute now, right? Like, how long has it been?
Almost 5 years. Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, you've been there for a while. I'm kind of curious, has living there, you know, influenced or even expanded your cultural palette when it comes to like movies or even like just media kind of in general?
Oh, 100%, man. I mean, just being exposed to the things that I am out here in particular were things that I would have never been able to do back home, you know, in a place like Missouri, for example. I mean, you know, New York and LA are, that's it, you know, when it comes to like media and entertainment and stuff like that. And New York is a movie going town. Like, people go to the movies here. Like, when I would go see like a small independent movie back in St. Louis, if they were even showing it, it would be me and probably like two or three other people in the theater. But here, people go see that stuff. Like, a small indie movie that cost, you know, $500,000 to make that had little marketing, like, it'll be damn near just as packed as, you know, if you went to go see like Jurassic World. You know, that's just kind of the atmosphere in the town. So I've never really been to an empty theater in New York ever, which for me is refreshing. I like crowds. I like being around a lot of people to see a movie. So it definitely has, man. And, you know, even like working with like certain colleagues, like in my last job, they would just kind of put me on to stuff that I wasn't like aware of, not even like trying to intentionally do it, 'cause they didn't even like all the way know that I was into it, but just having conversations and being around that environment of people saying like, oh yeah, did you see this weekend? Like, things that I probably wouldn't have caught on to as fast, like just hearing people talk about it, you know, sort of that word of mouth is definitely a huge thing. Like, people talk here, of course, and like share their knowledge about like, oh, I just saw this show or I just saw this movie. Like, you got to go see it. Like, that's still a big thing. And word of mouth is still probably, I think it's still the most powerful way that you can get people to see anything. So it works. And then just like having the ability to like see movies early. There's a lot of early screenings here. There's a lot of, you know, director talks or writer talks that happen here. Like, that happens all the time. My favorite theater here, they always have directors and filmmakers come through and do Q&As after they play a movie. Like, that's not unusual at all. They sell out fast, so it's hard to get into one, but it happens all the time. The different festivals that happen here, Tribeca, you know, is one. Just being exposed to that, being in and of that environment, has definitely just like opened my eyes up to, you know, how big the community is, but then also just like, just hearing about other stuff that, again, I probably wouldn't have known about if I hadn't, you know, been here in particular. But I will say that the internet is a great thing. I mentioned earlier, like YouTubers, podcasts, like all of that stuff helps. Like, if you even aren't in like an LA or New York or whatever, like, you can still listen to certain things or watch certain things and be hip, you know. But I've always just like been active and looking for that type of stuff. I'm always like looking for like what's next, like what's the next thing coming out. So it's been helpful to be here and just kind of be surrounded by that.
Yeah, that's dope. That Batman shit. That's that Batman shit right there. Constantly looking for something. That's that Batman
living amongst shit. The peoples. Like, oh, this is what's right, going on. Like, okay.
Okay. It all comes back. It all makes sense, man.
It all makes sense. Well,
what was your favorite movie going experience?
Oh wow.
Favorite or one of your favorites. Experience.
Ooh. I mean, I would say most recently, like within the last few years, I would say Get Out was a particularly surreal experience, just because I never watched Key and Peele. I probably saw a few sketches, but I didn't right. really watch Key and Peele like that. I knew who he was. I knew who Jordan Peele was. So there wasn't really, for me, there wasn't any precedent for like, what type of movies is going to be? What type of style is he going to strike? What is this going to be? And then you go in that movie theater and you just see this whole thing unfold. And it's like, you know, as Black people, we go see horror movies. We're talking at that movie. Like, we're right. going to say what we got to say about this movie. And it's like, it was the most surreal thing to happen, because I was talking at the movie and the movie knew that I was talking to it. Like, the movie was made for Black people to talk to it, because Jordan Peele knows how loyal Black people are to horror movies and thrillers and stuff like that. And he knows, like, yeah, we like to talk about this stuff, like, while we're watching it. We like to tell that girl, don't go down there, or run away, or right. why you fall. Like, we do all of that. And this movie, in a, you know, sort of a, ironic meta way was like, yeah, we're going to acknowledge that and we're going to pay it off as well. And like, that's going to be a thing and like a trope that we utilize throughout the entire movie. And just to see like how it all unfolded by the end of it, everybody was like, what the fuck did I just watch? I don't really know, but I know it was probably some of the greatest shit I've ever seen. Like,
especially at the end when the squad car pulls up and you're not really sure who it is.
Say that. I was like, bro, when I saw that, I was like, please don't let this end like that. I was like,
and it could have, right? And he filmed other ending.
That was gonna be the ultimate. That was
the original ending. And then he switched. And then he's like, nah, this gotta end.
He's like, nah. And I thank God that he made that decision, because that one scene could have changed the entire dynamic. We could have had a Queen and Slim in that one moment right there. Like, if he'd made a different decision, but he took a chance and was like, no, our hero is going to overcome this and he's going to win. And we never see that, you know? So it was fantastic to like experience that, like in a big packed movie theater, you know, and just like, and I went with like a big group of friends. Like I see a lot of movies like either solo or with like Desmond, like when we're going to review stuff, but like that was like with a big group of friends. So it was great. That was a great, great time for sure.
Yeah. I can't speak for Jesse or Derek, but for me, it was either Get Out or Endgame. Cause Endgame, I mean, Endgame is 3 hours of like fan service, and I don't care that all the women teamed up at the end. I don't care that a goddamn rat helps, you know, Ant-Man get out the quantum realm and all that kind of stuff. Like, being in the theater when, literally on opening night, when Cap takes Mjolnir, and like hearing the crowd explode for that. And then at the end, you know, when Tony Stark, you know, gives his life and all that, like it was such an emotional roller coaster. And it's one of those movies that, or franchises that stuck the landing. Like, you know, we talked about, you know, Game of Thrones, and there's other TV or series or whatever that don't stick the landing. And for the Avengers franchise to come to a satisfying end, like, oh, this makes sense. They paid off everything. Like, it was such a, like, that was like, oh, this was a great time at the movie.
Well, yeah, we got to see firsthand, literally within the year, we got to see how it works and how it doesn't work. Because you had an Endgame, which, you know, succeeded on pretty much every level. And then you had a Game of Thrones, which
that was in the same month, I think.
It was, you know, and then, you know, Star Wars for me there too. Like you had both examples of like how something can work when you wrap it up and how it doesn't work. And I mean, yeah, the experience, I mean, both Infinity War and Endgame, like going to see those in theaters, I probably will never experience anything ever like that again in my life. They were just completely overwhelming experiences, especially, I mean, you mentioned it, like seeing it on opening night. So you're guaranteed to see it with the most passionate fans. So people are going to be screaming and yelling and they're going to interact with this experience all at the same time. I mean, those were just completely overwhelming sensory overload type of experiences where it's just like, oh my God, I can't even believe I'm seeing this shit right now. And, you know, obviously emotional payoff and satisfaction there, of course, like there's a lot there and, it, you know, that holds a really special place in my heart just because of the development of those movies and where they came at in my life too. So yeah, those are absolutely up there. There's a lot, but yeah, man, it's always special when you can get that experience, when you can, you know, you go see a movie and not only does it become like a great movie that you see, but it becomes like this event that you remember in your life. Like this was actually important, and that doesn't happen often really at all. Like it's only happened like a handful of times for me. You know, so anytime that does happen, it's always special.
For sure.
All right. I respect that. I respect that a lot. So I'm just going to ask you real quick, who is a MCU book character that you identify the most with? You could put DC in here too. So, you know, this would be the perfect time to officially call yourself Batman. If you want to, but if you want to choose, like, you know, Tony Stark,
Batman or the Batman, you know, either one, you know,
John Williams, aka the new Black Batman, stop by this.
Man,
Black Man,
Black Man. I don't know about that one, but let's try to get a hero without Black in the title. You know, we can all try for that. But I had to think about this one. Because I was like, this is kind of hard, like, to try to identify with people that are super powered or whatever, you know, like,
And all, oftentimes, a lot of them are really, like, fucked up, too. Like, a lot of them are really fucked up, especially in, like, the MCU. They love to, like, throw a bunch of problems at them. Like, Tony, like, a lot of problems. Thor, a lot of problems, you know. And the person I'm going to say also has a lot of problems. But I had to really think about, like, being able to identify with a character. And I got to say, for me, it's Star-Lord from Guardians of the Galaxy, who I identify with the most because, one, I mean, you know, half celestial, half human, but mostly human and, you know, eventually fully human. But there's a lot of similarities there. Raised by a single mother, raised in Missouri, you know, things both that I can relate to. Has a huge love for pop culture and music and films, always making references, can also relate to that. But I think more so than anything is how loyal he can be to people that he considers friends and family. And that's something that's really important and big for me, that once you're a part of like my, you know, community or my tribe or whatever you want to call it, it's like, we're together and we're riding, you know? So that's like, that's a very admirable thing. He makes a lot of stupid, hot-headed decisions. Like we all can sometimes, like, you know, we all make mistakes. We're all superhuman, but that's why I like him so much because he does shit kind of off of impulse. And I think, growing up, like sort of, you know, still being in that, I still consider myself to be growing up. I still consider myself in a stage of like maturation and knowing like you're making stupid mistakes along the way. And that's fine. Like as long as you can get back on the right path and course correct, that's the way to go. But yeah, I appreciate how flawed he is, you know, in the movies. And I know a lot of people, you know, are mad at him for what happened.
People gave him so much shit for Infinity War. I don't understand it.
I'm like, I dare you to be put in that same, I mean, it wouldn't happen for the most part, but be put in that same situation and see what you would do, you know. And we can take real life examples. Like if somebody close to you were to get hurt or killed by
the dude standing 2 feet in front of you.
What are you going to do? You know what I'm saying? I would dare anybody to do anything differently. You would be better than me. I would say that. So there's just a lot there that I can relate to, you know, with his character. And, you know, I appreciate how they've portrayed him thus far. So I'm excited to see like where he goes, but that would be the guy out of like all the MCU that I could pick out.
What about y'all? I know this was a Jordan question, but what about y'all, Derek and Jesse?
It's actually kind of funny that you introduced me the way you did, of course, like we always do in our episodes, because I really feel like, you know, you called me Anthony Mackie Jr., and I really feel like maybe not even his character in particular, but like, because I mean, I'm not going to act like I can like recall like every character right now and like
Falcon.
Really think about it. Yeah. But I kind of see myself like either Falcon or just if you can just think of somebody in the MCU that just plays their role. Like I've always told like everybody that I'm
War Machine.
Yeah, like I've always told everybody that I'm around that like I'm really just a guy who plays his role, right? Like whenever I'm doing. Like right, like if I'm on a team, if I'm, you know, in part of a group project, group effort, you know, tell me what I need to do, right? And like I'll do it for you. Like so
and
like,
that's such a Falcon answer too. That's such a Falcon answer.
I guess I really am Anthony Mackie Jr. Like in that respect.
But that role is needed. That's a very important role. Somebody that's just gonna be like, I can do whatever. I'm gonna do it, and it's gonna get done. You could just depend on them to get it done. That's a really important role.
Exactly. I feel like that's definitely me. So.
Damn. I was gonna say that. I was gonna be like, I just sit here. I'm War Machine. I just sit here. What you want me to do?
I think you gotta give yourself a little bit more credit than that, Jesse.
We're gonna sit here and we're gonna keep moving. But just to play as the person that goes out there, I'll probably say Rocket.
Oh man.
I'll say Rocket.
Okay. I didn't see that coming, but that's a good one. That's a good one.
All right. That's fair. A lovable asshole. That's fair.
And we are out of time right now. Thank you so much.
You're gonna rap for me? Wow.
Wow.
I didn't even get my answer. All right. Thanks. Whatever.
Oh yeah, you were supposed to. Weren't you supposed to say who you were gonna pick for?
Yeah, I think like MCU has a special place in my heart because there's pieces of that I'm able to identify with everybody. But I definitely at points, I'm not calling myself Captain America, but I feel like I can identify with his struggle of like being a leader and getting everybody in line, and also like feeling like there's some sort of like weight on his shoulders to do the right thing and to make sure that he's morally aligned with where he needs to be, but then also being a super loyal person to him and his team around him and all that sort of stuff. Like Cap, even when he was exiled, he was like, you know, yo, Tony, if you ever need me, like, just call and I will be there, like, despite our differences. So that's how I feel.
It's a good answer, man. Good answer. Always try to be like Cap, you know? What would Cap do?
Exactly. Exactly. But Jordan, we could talk, we could legitimately talk to you for 4 hours, 5 hours, whatever. This could be an all day thing. Thank you so much again for coming on. Is there anything else that you would like to say?
Not in particular, man, but if you're listening, just tune into Two Black Nerds, I would say, if you want to hear more of me and my co-host Desmond. We actually will be having an episode coming out pretty soon. I think by the time this airs, it may already be out. We'll see. I don't know. We also have another special announcement coming up very soon here. I can't really say what it's going to be, but okay. I think listeners and people who support us will definitely want to tune in about this special announcement we got coming up. So again, if you want to just follow more, find us Twitter, Instagram at Two Black Nerds, or you can follow me on social media at JRW the Creator. So appreciate y'all for having me on again. This was fun. Thank you. If you ever want to have me back, just let me know. Holler.
Oh, for sure. We're for sure. You'll be back.
Appreciate that. It got to be the whole crew too. Like once Kobe's back in place. So yeah.
And you can bring Desmond on. We could do a total style crossover.
Hey. The most ambitious crossover in history is one with
since Power Rangers and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. But for Jesse Pink, for Derek Small Jr., for myself, Joshua Chapman, thank you guys so much for listening. Again, thank you to Jordan Williams for coming on with the podcast. We appreciate you, sir. Dre, thank you for everything behind the scenes. We appreciate you. And thank you to Kingboy and Jay Alizier for the outro music. Tune in next week, you guys, and we'll see you then. Bye.
Peace. This too hot, Scorpio.